Ottawa was one of the first cities in Canada to experience these school shootings. It was back in 1975 at St. Pius X High School. 1975. The reason I bring it up is because you wonder whether we've learned anything from it. And it's the subject of our web vote this morning. You know, should we be ensuring that psychological services by psychologists, certified psychologists, are covered by OHIP? There's a big debate in the United States over gun control law. There are 12 petitions underway in the United States that we know of at this point. One of them talks about improved access to mental health services, and it's sparked in part by a heartfelt appeal by a mother, Lisa Long, and she titled her essay, "I Am Adam Lanza's Mother." She's obviously not, but she fears she could be. Profound situation, her 13-year-old son frightens her. She wrote, "A few weeks ago, Michael, her son, pulled a knife and threatened to kill me and himself after I asked him to return his overdue library books. His 7 and 9-year-old siblings knew the safety plan. They ran to the car and locked the doors before I even asked them to. I managed to get the knife from my son, then methodically collected all the sharp objects in the house into a single Tupperware container that now travels with me. Through it all, he continued to scream insults at me and to threaten to kill or hurt me." And she talks about the difficulty she's been having in getting him psychological assessments and care. Chris Cobb writes for the Ottawa Citizen. He wrote a book after the St. Pius X school incident in which an 18-year-old student, Robert Poulin, opened fire with a shotgun on his classmates and wounded 5 and killed 1 before he turned the gun on himself. He had previously stabbed his 17-year-old girlfriend to death. Chris, good morning. Thank you for joining us.
Morning, Steve.
Do you look at what took place in Connecticut and wonder whether we've learned anything from these incidents in the past?
Well, yeah, it all comes flooding back, and sadly, the answer to your question is we haven't learned a great deal, or at least if we've learned a great deal, we haven't implemented the solution.
Your book was titled "Rape of a Normal Mind." Yes. Tell us about Robert Poulin and how he became mentally disturbed.
Well, it was. This was a long time ago, obviously, and Robert was basically a hermit in his own home. He lived in the basement, and he was, you know, exhibiting signs. We subsequently learned of mental illness, obsessions with pornography, and all kinds of issues that, Had anybody been observing him closely, they would have picked up on. He was allowed, as most parents allow, some independence by his parents, and who actually rarely, we learned at the inquest, rarely sort of, quote, invaded his privacy.
Rarely did. And I'm wondering how many parents are making the same error in judgment today. In the case of Adam Lanza, all indications are he was absolutely addicted to violent video games, in particular assault games, and that he had difficulty at some point distinguishing what he saw on a game with real life.
Yes, well, you know, you started this by reading from that article, and there's a sort of a continuation to that. In the United States, since 1982, there have been 61 mass murders involving firearms, and 43 of the killers were white males, and most, if not all, exhibited signs of mental illness. You know, the old sort of cliche that always comes out at these events was that so-and-so, i.e. the gunman, was a loner. I mean, they're always loners, and we always write about them being loners as if it's news, you know, as opposed to, you know, gregarious party type, was the gunman. It's so inevitably these people exhibit signs of mental illness.
I want to bring on Dr. Barry Dworkin. We were talking earlier, Doctor, and I'll ask you to repeat it, about cognitive behavior therapy and how it is in particular being used for people who are having difficulty adapting to life.
Sure. Well, when you think of what happens when we face a trauma, right? Our brain tries to make sense of what's happened. And if you are alone and without any feedback from anybody around you, you tend to create or develop ideas or thoughts or decisions that may not necessarily reflect what really has happened. Or you try to make sense of it, but as you make sense of it, you create maladaptive thoughts and behaviors. So a good example, Steve, is if you think of any scenario that happens, a trauma to somebody, you know, or you break up and you think things about the other person that may have broken up with you that are not reflective of what really has happened. And so this is how we play out our scenarios in our mind, and at times with little evidence to support what we are thinking. And so we can convince ourselves that our point of view and our conclusions are correct, despite evidence that from an outside observer, they may say to you, hey, wait a minute, this is not necessarily what is happening. And so what cognitive behavioral therapy tries to do is to point out and raise awareness of how you are thinking and how it may not necessarily reflect what really is happening, and gives you tools to challenge yourself to say, okay, is what I'm doing right now really a good way to try and resolve this issue? And with over time and with the therapist, these tools become ingrained. You have the capacity to step back out of yourself, as it were, and say, hey, is this the right way to respond to this? Or how can I respond to this to make myself better and deal with this situation? And that's what is lacking in a lot of our ability to be able to help people, is that they don't have access to this type of therapy.
Don't have access. Why?
They don't have access because the psychologists who are especially trained for this is what they do, are not covered under OHIP. So you either have to have somebody who is under a really good health plan, and even if that is the case, a private insurance plan, they usually will cover only about $500 to $1,000 of the therapy, which is only enough to get you started and not really enough to take you through the entire process. And for many people who are on social assistance or who have no coverage at all, can't afford to go see the psychologist. And what's unfortunate is that this type of service is readily available. You can see a psychologist, an excellent psychologist, for these particular problems within days, if not within a week, as opposed to trying to get psychiatric services, especially for kids. Psychiatric services where you're told it's 3 or 6 months from now, and despite, and I know this is not politically correct, Steve, but I'm really tired of everybody saying, let's raise awareness about mental illness, and yet having none of the CHEO or the Royal Ottawa not be available for us to be able to get help for our patients.
I think if I may just interject here, Steve, everything Barry says is so true. The mental health system in this country is abysmal. And I think one of the statistics that came out of the Mental Health Commission in the spring was that Canada spends less on mental health than pretty well any other developed nation. You go sit in the courthouse, which I do periodically, and you constantly see people who are obviously mentally ill being sent to jail. And that's another huge problem we have, that people who should be in treatment are being sent to jail because there's no treatment available for them, or there's no bed for them to go to.
And then when they get to jail, they don't get any treatment.
Well, they inevitably get worse. We can be complacent here. And I know a lot of people look at the United States and think, you know, thank God we don't have guns and what have you, and which is, you know, probably very, you know, very true. But still, we're as badly off as they are in terms of mental health treatment.
Barry, what do you think it's going to take? You know, everybody talks about destigmatizing mental health issues, and I think we've succeeded in that. I think it is destigmatized, but enough gum flapping from politicians. Let's destigmatize it. Put your money where your mouth is.
Well, part of it is that all decisions are made, frankly, by our governments as a short-term solution. They try to publicize how well they're doing things in short time frames. And when you're dealing with mental illness, it's a long-term phenomenon. There are many people, and it's absolutely correct. You know, you look at people who are in the prison systems. Just look down the street from you at the mission and all the people that are outside. All the, I would guarantee you that the bulk of those people are suffering from bipolar disorder or schizophrenia or other mental illnesses. And had they been helped earlier on in their lives, these people were once children. Think about it. They were once children who were experiencing these problems. And had they had the help, I could guarantee you that a lot of them, maybe not all of them, but a lot of them would not be on the street, would not be in pain, because that's exactly what they're in. They are in pain because of this, and they're expressing that pain in ways that harm either themselves or others.
And it's problems that often begin to manifest around 13 or 14 and then really become serious in the 18 through 24-year-old age group.
Well, exactly. During adolescent development, that is when we're learning the skills to how to deal with other people, learning about ourselves, learning our own identities, trying to develop ways to interact with others. And it's a very delicate time. And if you have drug abuse, if you have mental illness, if you have environmental situations that can interfere with that normal development, you're going to have maladaptive behaviors. You're going to see behaviors that are, you know, when you look at it from as an outside observer, you say, this is really doesn't make sense. Why is this person doing it? But to that person, that was their brain's way of trying to deal with the situation in order to preserve them and at least protect them. But it's a maladaptive thing. So the only way to get things done is to think in the long term and say, you know, it may cost us quite a bit for mental health services by having psychologists involved. But the long-term effect is that all what we spend on dealing with the end result of these people that are damaged will disappear, or at least be tremendously reduced, and the savings from that can be put back into continuing services for other areas. But there's no long-term view. It's all short-term gain for governments.
Chris Cobb, thank you for joining us, Chris.
You're welcome.
And Dr. Barry Dworkin.